You got to turn up the sound now. You got to turn up the sound.
Good. You want to live? We're rolling.
All right.
Welcome everybody to Imagine This Podcast. This is David Lee.
It's Mac Antigua.
Hey Mac, how do you like all this new gear we have?
I think it's distracting how we do the podcast. Actually, I mean it's awesome. It's so awesome, this new gear. I hope it shows in the actual product.
Well, we definitely sound nicer.
Yeah. It feels like legit. It feels like we're a real podcast now.
We didn't get any submissions for getting our tropical house off of the soundboard.
info@imaginemke.org.
So
we will pay good money for it.
Yeah. I mean, as much as we paid for the last...
We paid $10. We paid $10 for the rights of that last track. So I think you can give us something that's better than $10.
I kind of love it. I still hum it now.
Okay. I think it's perfectly fine for the money we paid for it.
Yeah.
Perfectly fine.
So we have new gear in the office, and I just got a shout. So we bought a soundboard to do these podcasts and all the other audio programming we're going to be working on. And we realized that when you buy something professional, you need professional stuff. And our headphones don't actually have, we have these 3.5 millimeter input jacks on our headphones. And
yes,
this thing requires, I think, quarter inch.
Yeah. Like real stuff.
And so last night, recognizing that we didn't have the real stuff, I go on to Amazon to order, you know, these headphone adapters. And Amazon says they'll deliver by 8 a.m. They didn't. And this is what's so cool about working in our office.
Yeah.
Independent Studios is just downstairs, you know, leading recording studio in Milwaukee.
Right.
And to be able to go down to say, hey, this is super embarrassing, but do y'all have like a 3.5 millimeter to quarter inch adapter? And downstairs they were like, why, yes.
That's like when we used to ask our neighbors for a cup of sugar.
Yeah, that's right.
Do you have some rice? We could borrow a cup of rice.
This is the 21st century version of that, right?
Like, yeah. Do you have a 1/4 inch adapter?
Uniquely well suited to help us.
Yes. Awesome. So thanks so much for Independent Studios for supporting us getting this done. Hi, everybody. It's episode 3. Intersections is the working title we're going with. And David, you want to talk about what we're going to talk about? That's super meta. David, why don't you talk about what we're going to talk about?
So, yeah, we had our steering committee meeting earlier this week where we got the co-chairs of each of our 4 work groups together to talk about how we plan for the upcoming March work group meetings to ensure that the work of our work groups are integrated and mutually reinforcing. And so, you know, I think a couple of weeks ago, you all heard about the Turbo Team steering committee that right. is driving our DNC work. This is the actual steering committee of the Imagine MKE world.
Right. So just to give you a quick rundown, there's not the Marvel Cinematic Universe. This is the Imagine MKE Cinematic Universe, because some of you are like, what are they talking about? Going back to it, we have a vision, right, of a inclusive, engaged Milwaukee that's known for being a world-class city for making art and culture. That doesn't belong to one person or one organization, really. It belongs to all of us here in Milwaukee. And so Imagine MKE was formed to try to figure out how to be the vehicle for that to happen, right? And so that's when we talk about collective impact, that's what we're talking about. And so our method of doing this is through convening our network through a consistent set of convenings. And so there are different roles in this universe, right? And so, for example, you actually have the steering committee that David talked about. And so each one of the work groups that we have on, and let me remind you what they are, we have neighborhood partnerships, support for artists, marketing and PR, and public policy, right? Those are the 4 agenda pieces that have been developed, and that's how I Imagine MKE was born, to advance in that area. Each one of those areas has a 2 co-chairs, and these are folks from the field, experts in the field, to support making sure to affirm we're on the right track for that stuff, and also to engage folks in the field to support that, right? So we have 2 steering committee members, and then each group also has an IMKE staffer assigned to hold the work moving forward between these meetings, right? To kind of be the connective tissue between meeting to meeting. Right. So and then you could check out the website and you can see the slide for the players, but just give me a sense of that. And then you actually have the work group members themselves. Right. And so The purpose of that is that given this agenda, how does someone who comes to a work group meeting feel inspired at the end of this meeting to go do something before the next meeting that advances the work? So you got the, hopefully that meeting was an agenda that was power packed, developed by both, again, the steering committee members and your staffers. Finally, the last piece of the puzzle is the implementation team. That's me and Annie on the team here. And our job is to convene the spaces, support the agenda building, be the backbone for all this to happen and to make sure that everybody knows where to go and how we're doing overall. And again, importantly, giving us the scoreboard for how is the group even moving forward on getting all this stuff done. So that's our work. So to give you a context, today we just had our steering committee meeting, and sort of the rhythm of it goes, you have a steering committee meeting, and then the next month you actually convene the larger meeting, and it makes sense because the steering committee could be a great point to go, how do we make sure those next meetings when we engage our whole network are going to work, right? So we have the March work group meetings. We're about 4 weeks out or so. That's what the steering committee meeting was about. And the thing was, all those four areas we just mentioned, it would be great if we just had progress in one of them, right? In some ways, that's mission accomplished because we haven't had that before. However, it's so important not just to have progress in all of them, but to make sure your progress in one area is informed by the other three, because these are not silos, right, David? So if I'm trying to advance in neighborhood partnerships, there should be from insight from the public policy sensibility, from a marketing PR sensibility, as well as support for artists to inform that work. And you can imagine you could run the gauntlet for the other areas.
Isn't that in the collective impact sort of lingo, mutually reinforcing activities?
Look at you. Somebody's read the book. Yes. Mutually reinforcing activities. And again, we know it's not working if we're thinking of these just on their own, right? So that's what we're going to talk about today. Was we talked about in the meeting, our leaders came together to look at the progress since we started last June, right? And seeing, okay, if this is the work that we're trying to do in these areas, how do we make sure as we move forward, it's informed by the work that's been happening in the other groups?
I also think too, that we are in this really interesting moment in our organizational life cycle, as Max said, 7 months in as an organization with staff. I mean, we've been spending so much time getting everything up and standing up an organization, hiring staff, developing the outreach materials, tools, and ways of engaging folks, that we really haven't begun putting thought or thought horsepower behind this idea of how these activities and how these work groups are mutually reinforcing. And I think while it's always been clear to me, I think what's been really interesting about this moment is that we're finally getting that point where we can actually begin to think about that and think about how the shared agenda that we're trying to advance through neighborhood partnerships, through artist support, through public policy, and through marketing and PR actually fuel each other, right? Because once that happens, then we really are beginning to cook with fire.
And I'd say, David, you know, when you pull the camera back, and this is at the risk of being too meta, right? I would offer that when we look at the arts and culture sector as a whole, it's amazing talent, powerful, creative individuals, and they're moving fast. And why I think Imagine MK was created was because they're not always moving fast together, right? Or they're not moving in an aligned way. And so really, this is a chance for us to walk our talk, right? That how do we make sure that if these four issues are trying to move, that they're really moving in an aligned way forward? And then our hypothesis is we're actually gonna be better if we can move all these things together. And so we're about to talk about some of the great insights from that meeting. Not just to update you about how we think these are intersecting, but also this is setting the table for the March work groups. We hope that, wow, I'm really interested in this. That's what you're going to talk about in March? Yeah, I want in. Let me know when it's happening. So I'm going to turn it back over to David. David, do you want to walk through and identify a few key intersection points that really were interesting for our steering committee and they were inspired to pursue?
Yeah, you know, I think on the neighborhood partnership side, the key, I think, topic that came up was this idea of how do we utilize the work in neighborhood partnerships to build really authentic engagement with our city's incredible neighborhoods, uplift the talent that's living in those neighborhoods, and then also how do we engage with neighborhoods in a way that is authentic and in a way that feels welcome, right? I think that thought about radical welcome, it really sort of came up in a number of different areas, right? Mm-hmm. So I think oftentimes when we think about our city's neighborhoods outside of downtown, the feeling is, well, we have all this great stuff downtown. Why don't they just come, right? And how do you, and I think our view on that is, well, if some folks just don't feel welcome, they're not going to show up. It doesn't feel like it's for them, right? I think the most interesting story I have about this is that, you know, one of the most diversely attended arts institutions in our city is the Public Museum downtown. It feels like a place that's for Milwaukee. Every time I'm there, it looks and feels like Milwaukee. And I think that when they did their survey about where they were going to build their new building, their main stakeholders said, don't build it by the lake because that place doesn't feel like it's for me. And so I think for us, how do we utilize the neighborhood partnerships work in a way to create the sense of like what we're calling sort of bilateral inclusion, right? Mm-hmm. Whereby we can then support artists who are living there, right? That sort of helps the artist support agenda, that we can help tell a more integrated story, right? Which helps to build this narrative in the marketing and PR work. And then on the public policy side, which is the work group I staff, how do we understand the needs and desires of the community show up in a way that feels like we are there for them? And then how do we as an arts community begin to advocate for issues that are very present in the lives of our residents in the neighborhoods?
David, you brought up the Public Museum, and it just dawned on me as I just did jury duty last month. And one of the interesting offerings is when you're waiting to be called to a jury, you can go to lunch and you also have a free admission to the Milwaukee Public Museum, which is right by the courthouse. And it just didn't, that isn't an obvious invite, but one of those like, oh, of course, why wouldn't you? And I think that speaks again to this notion that someone along the way said, this is a no-brainer, right? Like everyone in Milwaukee goes through jury duty. So everyone in Milwaukee should be coming to the Public Museum. And I think that the instinct there speaks to what you're talking about, of welcoming. And I thought that's just a fascinating connection. And how do we foster more of that serendipity in these? And that's what you're talking about, welcoming.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the other side of it I want to amplify and lift up is it's two ways, right? You talked about why don't folks feel welcome downtown? But I also think this notion of how do we make sure art is welcome in all of our zip codes? And I think that requires us to be able to identify and support artists that are happening in their communities. And then also, it also invites us to consider what more things can be included as art and what more things matter, right? And so I think that's an interesting thing that will be relevant to the marketing and PR group, as well as it's relevant to support for artists, because it's identifying these artists that are there, and then how do you make sure they thrive in those zip codes? And then more importantly, how do people find these zip codes that aren't the Third Ward, that aren't downtown?
Yeah, you know, we have... this is a little bit of a preview, but we're going to be releasing some research that shows how vibrant our city's arts and culture world is in the next few weeks. And, you know, I think because the research has a spatial modeling component to it, it shows that many of our outerlying zip codes are much more vibrant than I think people intuitively think of themselves, them as. And I think that's there's two takeaways there, right? The first is that for a city of our size, and this is a story that we've been telling for forever, right? Is that for a city of our size, we have an incredible downtown core of art stuff. The shadow side of that, of course, is, well, if there aren't things in these other zip codes, how do these other zip codes and communities feel like they see themselves as creatives, artists, and a part of this thing that's happening downtown, right? And I think we were talking a little bit about it earlier today. Like, how do we build the culture, the creative culture of the city, that makes it such that I don't care if you are working at Northwestern Mutual in the accounting department, or if you're playing viola in the symphony, that, you know, you sense yourself in this incredibly creative and artistic city.
Can you speak more about the narrative building? It sounds like you're telling a story. What were the other intersections around narrative building that came up?
Yeah, so the narrative building work is basically the core of the marketing and PR work. And I wish that Lindsay were able to join us today, because I think she's a much better at talking
upcoming,
about this.
Upcoming
friend of the pod guest.
Yes.
Or maybe with her own episodes. Line. Anyways, yeah, her own line. She's like, forget these two.
Yeah.
I'm making my
we're
own.
We're dead weight. Yeah. We're dead weight.
So, her role really is to help the role that she's playing in the marketing and PR work is to build this narrative of our city as an arts and culture mecca, right? And so I think that relates to not only neighborhoods as we mentioned, right? How do we build that sense of inclusion and radical welcome, but then also on the artist support side, I think there's this really interesting old saw that we have about people are artists because, you know, they do it because they love it and that's what they're getting paid in, mm-hmm. As opposed to
exposure and love.
Yeah. As opposed to,
it's not enough.
God, you know, like the story that Deanna Tillish from UPath always tells is that Frank Allman, the concertmaster at the symphony, studied for years, right, to do the thing that he does, and that doesn't come. And that time investment is valuable, and the work that he produces is valuable. It's as valuable as any other product that's being produced, right? And I think, so how do we compensate artists, right? So that feels like and not only how do we compensate artists, but like the value of compensation, mm-hmm. and how, and that their work is worthy of being paid for, right? Mm-hmm. You just don't get it for giving them a platform to do their thing.
Yeah, and I think Andrew Zitzer, who's out of the Drexel University in Philadelphia, has done a lot of research that we're looking at around this notion of an artful and an artless city. And he talks about the importance of artists as workers, not that they have economic needs that should be met with compensation and support so they can continue to do the thing that makes the city great, right? Because if art is this driver for economic development, artists don't necessarily have the means of production necessarily, because they're beheld to having to do gig jobs perhaps, or not having the support to do this at certain places, or maybe not even the knowledge of what's the right compensation for that. So I think what you're talking about, David, and what's lifted is how to make sure that our marketing team or our marketing work could continue to shape the narrative that the artists and cultural creators have to be supported and have to be compensated properly. And to extend that, we're also looking at arts administrators, right? Like those folks that are working in institutions, right, that do the art. These are folks that also, and again, to me, this crosses over to the nonprofit world. That's where I come from before here. This notion of, I think when we talk about overhead, you know, we only pay X amount for overhead. It's a dangerous thing because we have to go, overhead matters, right? People matter because they're the ones who, not just the artists and creators, but who's helping create the opportunities for these things to thrive. So I think these are narratives that we have to shift. And I think what's interesting, David, I don't think they're just limited to arts and culture, right? These are larger narratives.
That's right.
Around the meaning and value of work and the value of people.
You know, I'm reminded of one of our work group members who lifted this up in a couple of work group meetings in the last round, where he was talking a lot about, like, how do you think of artists, I mean, to your point, right, as workers, not as a special, almost like a trade.
The creative class, yeah, right?
These are trade people.
This mystical group of people.
That's right.
Right.
And that, you know, in some ways that doing or advocating for an agenda that helps the minimum wage, for example, is likely something that's going to help artists, because I'll tell you what, when I was in Los Angeles trying to make movies, it would have been great to have worked jobs that had health insurance and everything else.
Mm-hmm. As well as transportation, right? And the ability to get to places, yep. And all these things. So I think that's the important intersection that was reinforced, and I think, well, should be informing the work, not just for support for artist group that is definitely working on increasing markets and access for artists so that they can make a living or part of their living on their art, but also, again, for marketing to shape the messaging and create the conditions for that conversation to happen. One more thing to talk about, David, the shift to public policy, right? Because that was a big one.
Yeah. I don't want to, like, be the person who's like, yeah, this is my work group, and what a cool thing it was for everybody in that room to understand why it's so great. but it really happened.
It was a bit of a setup.
Right?
It was a bit of a setup. Yeah.
Well, I think it was really interesting that, like, the folks in that room, I think the flip got switched, right? Where they understood how public policy really begins to affect all and drive change in all of these different areas.
Yep.
I think the example I always give is, you know, with the DNC coming to town, If they want the city to come alive and have music on every corner, well, it just so happens that we have really regressive anti-busking policies, mm-hmm. right? So if the idea is, well, we'll just tell the police not to enforce it for those 3 days, that's great for the DNC, but maybe not so great for us, mm-hmm. right? Like mm-hmm. when it's Thursday night and you and Paru are like going to see a play at the Rep and right. you leave and you're like, you know what? Do we go home or do we go grab a drink at Moe's? What if the city felt alive downtown, right? With buskers on every corner. You're like, maybe we'll just, you know, we'll go grab a drink, right? That feels like a thing that we want all the time in our city, right. not just during 3 days during this convention.
And so I think what was lifted up in the meeting is the importance for like the support for artist work group to really be in dialogue to inform, you'd shared the public policy work group is going to put together a platform, if you will, of really attractive policies.
Staying away from that B word.
We're not going to say blueprint because there's a lot of great blueprints out there. But what's the arts version of blueprint? But to your point, we're going to try to figure out what are those policies that are informed by artists to support them to thrive, right? Conversely, what are the policies that support neighborhoods,
right?
To host art or to convene art or whole culture more. So I think that was lifted up is that it's important for all these groups to really help inform. And Dave, what's the target? I'm going to put you on the marker. What's the target for getting this blueprint or whatever we're going to call it for now? When will that be out there?
So we are going to be hosting listening sessions in the next few months. Our goal to get this out is June.
June 2020.
That's right. And a framework, not a blue, but like potentially a direction.
And the hope for that is that, and I'll say this yesterday, I spoke to some students and faculty at the School of Architecture and Urban Planning at UWM. Look at that flex. Flex that. I got to speak as part of their lecture series. And I just lifted them some of the public policy things you had shared just now. And a lot of them were like, I didn't know that. I didn't. And I think by having that blueprint, whatever you call it, it equips more people like that to go, well, why don't we have this? Why does that rule exist? And I think that's what we're hoping to do is equip more people to say, hey, why not have more music on every corner? What's it going to take for more all ages venues to happen? Awesome. So those are some of the key pieces. And again, we lift this up for you, for the listener, to hopefully entice you to come on out and be part of our March work groups. And so you go to the website, click on the meeting and RSVP because we want to put you in the hopper. Because before you come to the work group, we don't know what you're coming in for. But everything we just talked about is going to be informed these agendas that will be happening the first 2 weeks of March. And again, the meeting groups are neighborhood partnerships, marketing and public relations, public policy, and support for artists. They'll be meeting throughout the city, and you'll have an opportunity to connect with others that are interested in this and think about, after that meeting, what can you do from your role to advance it? Last round, we had 80 actions that were promised. I'm excited to say that more than half are in process or completed already. We hope to finish that. But again, the whole point of you coming out to meetings is for you to be moved to add to our collective impact towards making this vision of a more vibrant art city a reality. So this is G-C-B. This is about Mello dropping 30. Come shop this year. It's time for Joyful Abundance. So it's my turn this week to talk about Joyful Abundance. And so I want to build on the theme of every zip code having art. And although this zip code doesn't hurt for art, I like how they name it. It's called 53212 Presents. Want to hype them up. They're based out at 731 East Center Street. And it's a management team that provides access for affordable rehearsal and performance space and production support for artists, performing arts groups, and youth partner organizations from the 53212, with the goal of increasing Milwaukee's access to the artistic products of the 53212 community. So want to amplify their work. They've just had a recent run of really cool stage readings. Our next big project is The Nether, March 6th through 21st. And per their takes, it's like a hit series, Black Mirror. Popular female playwright Jennifer Haley blurs reality into a virtual realm known as The Nether. So it's looking at technology, looking at dystopian stuff in real time. So check it out and supporting. Want you to be aware of this really cool space that's above Company Brewing. So again, Company Brewing, another homegrown brewery, upstairs, the Brewing Art, and making it happen in the 53212.
And a two-for-one on that is that The Nether is being produced by the Constructivists, which is a theater company run by Jamelyn Gray, who directed God of Hell that we saw last year by Sam Shepard.
And that was at the Underground Collective.
That was at the Underground Collective. It was really, really amazing. So make sure you get out to see The Nether.
That's it. So that's my Joyful Abundance. Rock on 53212 presents.
So that's it, right? We did it. With this new gear.
Hopefully it's still a frictionless experience for you at home. Hopefully you didn't get too much friction.
Is it too distracting for us, do you think?
I think it's more distracting for you because you're producing the episode and being on the episode at the same time as you're hitting random buttons. Well, that wraps up another episode of Imagine This Podcast. You know what to help us imagine the next podcast? Let us know what you think by going to letting us a message at info@imaginemke.org, or be sure to subscribe or star or just love us some more. So let us know if we're on the right track with this thing.
Thanks so much. Come back next week.
Bye.
Bye.